close to his ear so only he can hear me. Cammy frowns. He's gay, I want to scream at her. And even if he weren't, seriously, I don't do sloppy men. I'll give you $100 if you can get everyone out of here so I can talk to your slutty cousin alone. Sam stands up and claps his hands.
I'll buy everyone a shot, except for Cammy.
Cammy rolls her eyes, but stays seated. Everyone else follows Sam to the bar, laughing and clapping each other on the back. She looks at me expectantly, like she's on to my scheme. I swear, this bitch and I speak the same language, in different accents. Olivia Caspin, I say. Her face registers nothing. Do you know her? Her lips curl into a smile, and she dips her head once to acknowledge that she does. I feel searing heat start in my chest and spread outward. Emotional fireworks, if you must. I knew it. I lick my lips and pull a cigarette from my purse. That's how you know Caleb, I say. She nods, that awful smile still on her lips. I inhale and watch her through my lashes. Why does he love her? This was the first time I had ever verbalized the question, though I had pondered over it for God knows how many years. Olivia was attractive, if you were into sluts. She had too much hair and wide-spaced eyes, but I had been around her enough during my trial to know how men responded to her. She was aloof, cold. It was mysterious. Goddamn men and their goddamn mysteries. I had never seen her smile. Not once. It was hard to believe someone as alive and warm as Caleb would have feelings for an emotional prune. Cammy is watching me, trying to decide how far she wants to go with her answer. I wonder how well she knows Olivia. It had never occurred to me, until now, that she might be good friends with her. Eventually, she clears her throat. Well, she's a bitch like you. Caleb has always been attracted to the Cruella de Vil type, but I suppose if you want an honest answer. Her voice trails off. The band comes on stage and things are starting to get loud. I lean forward, hungry for her answer. They spark, she says. I jerk back. What the hell did that mean? When they're together, it's like putting a hurricane and a tornado in the same room. You can feel the tension. I didn't believe in the cliche of soulmates until I saw them together. I've heard enough. I am sick to my stomach. I look around for my ride and can't see him anywhere, but Cammy's not done. I know you got pregnant on purpose, she says, plucking my cigarette from my fingers and taking a draw. I blink at her, too intrigued to argue. How could she possibly know? Now, you've got the guy and the baby. You won. So why are you asking about Olivia? I consider lying, telling her that I'm making sure she is gone for good or some bullshit like that. She smirks. You want to know why he loves her, Leah? She overemphasizes the "ah" in my name. I flinch. What a bitch. I shake my head, but the little blonde is smarter than she looks. She stubs out my cigarette. You won't find an answer to that from anyone but Caleb. If I were you, I'd let it go. Go enjoy the life you stole for yourself. Olivia won't be showing up at your doorstep crying, if that's what you're worried about. I feel my face heat as I remember the time I followed Caleb to Olivia's apartment. That was inside information. The little bitch is probably her best friend. He wouldn't leave me for her, even if she did. I say this with more confidence than I feel. Cammy raises her eyebrows and shrugs. Then why do you care? I swallow hard. Why do I care? It isn't like I grew up in a home where my parents were madly in love. My mother married my father for money,
She told me so on numerous occasions. I have my guy, so why am I picking at the scab?
I don't know. It's not fun to play second choice, is it?
She plucks a piece of tobacco from her tongue and flicks it off her fingertip.
There is a possibility that you feel like you're worth more than being Caleb's marriage of pity. And if that's true, then you should jump ship now. It's only a matter of time before the Caleb-Olivia saga starts up again.
Her words sting. I shift around in my chair as pain courses through me.
I thought you said she moved on, I hiss.
Yeah, so? Cammy shrugs.
Their story will never be over. She's married, you know? So technically you have some time to make your husband fall in love with you.
I can't hide my surprise. She hadn't married Turner, that's for sure. He'd blown up my phone after she broke things off with him, begging me to appeal to her on his behalf. Stupid Turner. After the whole amnesia debacle, I broke into her apartment and found letters from Caleb, dated to his college days. It didn't take long to figure out she was his ex-girlfriend, trying to pull a fast one on him. I blackmailed her into leaving town, and then hired a private detective who tracked her to Texas. A friend was attending the same law school as Olivia was, so I made a call, traded some Super Bowl tickets, and bam, next thing I knew, they were engaged. The luck. Turner was a tool. How a woman could go from Caleb to that half-wit was beyond me. Either way, I thought she was out of my life for good, until Caleb hired her to be my attorney. And a good thing he did, too, because she won the case and saved me from 10 years in state prison. I don't say any of this to Cammy, whose southern accent is suddenly making me uncomfortable. Was she the friend Olivia had gone to live with in Texas? Nothing further passes between us, as Sam chooses to resurface at the table at that exact moment. I stand up to leave. Cammy is no longer looking at me. She's kissing the skateboarder who is cupping her chest in one hand and holding the other above his head as he makes the Black Sabbath horns with his fingers. I turn, disgusted, and follow Sam to his car.
Did you get the answers you needed?
He says, when we are on the road. I look at him in surprise.
What are you talking about?
He tucks in one side of his mouth and looks at me out of the corner of his eye.
She's my cousin, and she's a blabbermouth. She told me about that chick.
I stare at him, open-mouthed.
You knew she was friends with Olivia, and you didn't tell me?
That's what you were hoping for, weren't you? You wanted to know if she knew her?
He's right, but I'm still angry. I'm your boss, I say.
You should have told me. And what kind of gay man are you, anyway? You're supposed to love gossip and drama.
He throws back his head and laughs. Despite the world of bad news swirling around my head, I smile. Maybe he's not so bad. I decide to stop trying to get Caleb to fire him. When I get home, Caleb is already in bed. Not ours, but the twin bed in the baby's room. I check the milk supply in the fridge. Luckily, there is enough frozen for a day or two. Enough time for the dirty martinis to work their way out of my system. I roll my eyes. Caleb will probably check my blood alcohol level before he lets me pump again. I go to bed, still wearing my clothes. Sadder than I've ever felt.
Chapter 12. Past.
My sister was so beautiful, it almost hurt your eyes to look at her. Thank God, that's all I did in those early years. She was younger than me. Only by a year, but still. It was kind of awkward to idolize your baby sister. It was hard not to, since the minute she walked into a room, every eye was stuck to her, like she had some sort of ethereal fairy magic flowing from her pores. For a long time, I believed that once I hit a certain age, I would get some of that fairy juice. No such luck.
I looked like a malnourished crack hoe with braces and $1,200 sneakers. Courtney made me want to die, especially when she dated and then disposed of all the boys I liked. I could never be mad at her for it. We were a team, Court and Joe, until Joe decided she wanted to be Leah, and then it was Court and Lee. Despite our closeness, as we got older, there was no denying the chasm our differences caused. Our friendship wavered for a year in middle school. She left me for the cheerleaders. I watched her make new friends from my seat in the social bleachers, picking bread from my braces and trying to figure out why my boobs hadn't come in yet. I am nothing like the rest of my family. Each one of them, with the exception of my mother, had raven black hair. Pair that with the Smith signature olive skin and green eyes, and they look like an army of beautiful Greeks. I was born red. My skin, my hair, and my hot, fussy attitude. My mother used to tell me that I cried for a week after they brought me home. She said I lost my voice, and all you could hear was air coming out of me as I made screaming faces. Our mother encouraged Courtney to do all of the typical perfect girl things, cheerleading, modeling, and stealing other girls' boyfriends. I, on the other hand, was encouraged to diet, especially during my last year of middle school. I was a little chubby. I started eating my feelings when I discovered boys, rejection, and Little Debbie snack cakes. I went from malnourished to fleshy all in a matter of months. "You're going to seriously regret this," my mother said, upon discovering my stash. I'd hidden a dozen assorted boxes in an old Christmas popcorn tin in the pantry. "You already have red hair. Now you want to add pounds of extra flesh?" To emphasize her point, she grabbed a handful of fat at my waist and pinched it until I'd cried out. She shook her head. "Hopeless, Johanna." And then she tossed all of my snack cakes in the trash. I bit my lip to keep from crying. When she saw me struggling with tears, she'd softened a little. Maybe she was chubby once, I thought hopefully. "Here." She opened the freezer and shoved a bag of frozen peas against my chest. "When you get the urge to binge on crap, eat these instead. Just think of it as a frozen treat, like ice cream." When I looked doubtful, she'd grabbed my chin and forced me to look at her. "You like boys?" I nodded. "You won't get them if you eat snack cakes. Trust me. No one's ever hooked a man with processed cake crumbs on her face." I'd carried my bag of frozen peas back to my room and sat down cross-legged on the floor. Staring up at my Jonathan Taylor Thomas poster, I ate the entire bag, pea by pea. I was kind of nerdy. I liked boys, but I also liked math and science. But math and science didn't give you attention. It was a one-sided, dry love. I wanted people to look at me the way they did Court. I rolled onto my back and chewed on my peas. I kind of liked them. The next day, I asked Court to introduce me to her friends. "You make fun of cheerleaders," she said. "I won't anymore. I want people to like me." She nodded. "They will, Lee. I do." Court snagged me an invite to a sleepover, complete with all her giggly friends. Despite her reassurance, her friends had not liked me. They were 13-year-old bitches, heavily sedated by their mother's opinions. They ended almost every sentence with the words, "sweetie" or "awesome." I didn't want to be like those girls. I didn't want to be like my mother. When one of them asked why I hung out with the math geeks, I'd snapped. "They talk about more interesting things than you." The girl, Brittany, had looked at me like I was something detestable. She'd cocked her head and smiled at me. I could almost see her cardigan-wearing mother doing the same thing. "She's a lesbian," she'd announced to the room. The rest of the girls nodded, like it was a completely acceptable explanation for my strangeness.
Court's face had dropped. She'd looked so disappointed in me.
I'm not a lesbian, I'd said. But my voice had been weak, unconvincing. The girls had already taken Brittany's word for it. They were already avoiding my eyes. I'd looked around the room at their stupid, hairsprayed, pink-lipped heads and said aloud, "Fuck you!" before storming out. I felt mildly guilty for casting a shadow over Court's social game. She'd recover. She was too pretty not to. When she came home, she stormed into my room and folded her arms across her chest.
"Why would you do that?" she'd asked. "You ask me to help you and then you act like an idiot in front of my friends."
I shook my head. Was she kidding?
"Court, it was them. What are you talking about?" "You made me look really bad, Leah. You're so selfish. I'm so sick of your drama."
She turned to leave, but I jumped up and grabbed her arm. I couldn't believe she was saying this. It's like they were slowly stealing chunks of her brain and replacing it with their less functioning ones.
"That's not fair. You're my sister. How can you take their side? Brittany lied to everyone. You know I'm not a lesbian."
Courtney had jerked her arm away.
"I don't know that."
I'd opened and closed my mouth in shock. My sister, my Courtney, had never spoken to me this way. She'd never taken anyone's side over mine. I felt like someone was burning a hole through my chest. It hurt so bad.
"You're ruining things for me," she'd finally said. "They're my friends. You're my sister. It bothers me when they say stuff about you. Just please leave it alone and don't run your mouth anymore. You're making things hard for me."
I swallowed my response and nodded. I could do that for her. We never spoke about what happened after that day, but she was weird with me for a long time. Her friends made a point of snickering when they walked past me in the halls of our private school. They spread rumors, too. Told people that they caught me masturbating at the sleepover. All this, and Court never spoke a word in my defense. I never spoke a word in my defense. I started wondering if she believed them. In a few weeks, I was declared a lesbian by every popular kid in the 7th and 8th grade. When the rumors finally made it back to my parents, they sent me to Bible camp for the summer. I loved it. I met a pastor's son and lost my V-card in the bushes behind the communal bathroom. I came back with an affirmed taste for men. Of course, that didn't stop the lesbian rumors when school started again. Brittany took it upon herself to make sure every girl in her grade and mine knew that they shouldn't undress in front of me in the locker room. The boys would elbow each other in the hallways, snickering and making comments as I walked by. It was terrible. Hurtful. Courtney didn't correct them. That was the worst part. Our bond frayed and snapped, all under the cruel fingertips of King's High School. I had become used to it in a way. I expected that it was the same way I had become used to my parents' hands-off approach with me. I kept my head down, dated boys in the math club who could keep up with me mentally, and never stopped plotting against Brittany and her lackeys. I changed that year, and no one noticed. They were too busy ostracizing me to notice that my C-cups came in. I learned how to use a blow dryer and makeup. I lost my puppy fat. That same year, my sister and Brittany had a falling out over a boy named Paul. They both wanted him. To save their friendship, both girls had sworn off him in an emotional embrace, insisting that nothing, especially a guy, could come between their friendship. Brittany lasted a month before she slept with him. My sister was crushed. I didn't like seeing Courtney cry. And that's what she did for 2 weeks. I even caught her clutching a bottle of sleeping pills in the bathroom one day. "Not for a boy, Courtney," I'd said, snatching the bottle from her fingers. "Seriously, when did you become so weak?" She'd cried silent tears while staring at me with her bruised eyes.
I'd realized then that she was probably always weak. She stood up to our parents when it came to me because they favored her. It wasn't an act of courage to defy your parents when they never so much as raised their voices to you. I'd walked her to her bedroom and tucked her into bed. Then I'd crawled in next to her so I could watch her. The next day, I'd cornered Brittany at her locker. She was officially Paul's girlfriend, and now that she'd severed the bond with my sister, I didn't have to keep my mouth shut anymore. "You are a worthless slut, you know that?" I poked her in the collarbone for emphasis. Paul was waiting for her a few feet away. Brittany glared at me, slapping my hand away. "Ew, don't touch me, lesbian," she spat. I ignored her, turning my attention to Paul. I had planned this out. Paul was smiling slightly. I could see the words "chick fight" forming in his miniature, underdeveloped brain. A few people were gathering around us to see what was happening. "And you," I said, looking at Paul, "you're gonna need this." I tossed a condom at him. It bounced off his chest and landed between his Nikes. He looked at me, then at the red square at his feet. "She has herpes, you ass." The look on his face was worth every lesbian comment Brittany had made over the last 2 years. Before walking away, I glanced at Brittany. Her face was ashen. I wasn't supposed to know about the herpes. The walls in my house were thin, and she'd had one too many sleepovers with my sister. Destroying Brittany's reputation like she destroyed mine was just the axe I needed to loosen my shackles. It started with Brittany, but soon I was sleeping with everyone's boyfriends. I liked how easily I could make boys follow me around by dangling sex in their faces. I liked the way their girlfriends came to school with puffy red eyes from crying after they found out their boyfriends cheated on them. I hadn't joined ranks with the popular kids like my sister. I'd outranked them. I was flying high, and I didn't intend to stop. Chapter 13. Present. "We've been together a long time, Caleb." He doesn't look up when he says, "Yes." Normally, I would get a "yes, Red," or a "yes, love." But this time, I just get "yes." It feels lonely, that "yes." "Do you remember the last time we went to Los Angeles and ate at every celebrity hotspot we could get into?" He shoots me a look and keeps shuffling mail. Caleb is nostalgic. He likes talking about old memories. "We didn't have reservations," I continue. "But you talked your way into every restaurant we wanted to try." He's quiet as he listens. "We didn't see a single celebrity, but I felt like one the entire week, just being with you." I take the mail from his hands and set it on the counter, entwining our fingers. "Caleb, I know I'm a mess. You know I'm a mess. But you make me better. We have so much history, so much love. Please stop ignoring me." His jaw is working.
"I didn't want to go to those pretentious restaurants, Leah."
"What?"
I shake my head. "I thought this was going to work. I don't even have a backup plan." "I went because of you. I had a good time because of you, but that's not who I am."
"I don't understand," I say. His fingers are trying to pry themselves away from mine.
"I've been someone different with you. Someone I don't understand."
"Well, then be someone new. I don't care. We will change together."
Caleb sighs. "I don't think you'll like who I am."
"Try me, Caleb. I'll work hard to get to know him. Please. We can fix this."
"I don't know if we can do that. But we can try."
I smile tightly and hug him. I feel only the slightest hesitation before he hugs me back. I breathe in the smell of him,
We can try, I silently repeat to myself. Words I want, but they have an expiration date. We can try, until we can't anymore. We can try, but this already feels doomed. I will have to think of a way to make this more permanent. The next few weeks are peaceful. I pull out all of the cookbooks I got as wedding presents and actually start making meals rather than ordering out. If my man wanted a stay-at-home mom and wife, that's what he was going to get. I could totally be traditional. I make us eat at the dining room table we've never used. I even wheel the baby's movable bassinet into the room so she can be with us. He likes my cooking. Or he says he does. He eats all of it and seems genuinely happy that I'm trying. I go shopping for girl clothes for the baby and throw out all of the yellow and green. I proudly display them on the bed for Caleb to see. He picks up each one and nods in approval.
She's not wearing this, he says, holding up a little t-shirt that says, Date Me.
It's cute, I argue, diving for it. He grabs the shirt before I can and holds it above his head so I can't reach it. We spend the next 5 minutes chasing each other around the bedroom for ownership of it. We haven't played like this in a very long time. It feels good, like it did in the beginning of us. Sam watches our marital transformation with amusement. One day at breakfast, I ask Caleb where we are planning on vacationing this year.
Our vacations will have to be kid-friendly, he says, sipping his tea. Lots of Disney World and beach resorts, I imagine.
I balk. He has to be kidding. Sam notices my expression and has to stifle a laugh. I look at Caleb in alarm. I burn in the sun, I blurt. He smiles crookedly.
What? Did you think we'd be taking on Paris and Tuscany with a little girl?
I nod.
They need things too, Leah. It's fine if we expose her to the world, but little people need Disney World and sandcastles. Don't you have those memories from when you were little?
I don't. My school took us to Disney my junior year. I got really drunk with a couple of guys the night before and had a hangover the whole next day at the park. I don't tell Caleb this. I guess, I say, noncommittally, this traditional thing was really beginning to suck. What if she likes Paris? I ask hopefully. Then can we go? He stands up, kisses the top of my head.
Yes, right after we give her a childhood.
So while she's still little, can we go to somewhere good? It's not like she's going to care about Minnie Mouse just yet.
We are probably not going on vacation this year. She's too little to leave or to take anywhere.
I watch incredulously as he picks up his cell phone. Did he just confiscate my vacation? That's ridiculous, I announce, licking my spoon clean of oatmeal. Plenty of people have babies and go on vacation.
There are things you have to give up when you have a family, Red. Are you just figuring this out?
Let's give up red meat, music, electricity, just not vacation. Sam drops the armful of laundry he's holding. I can see his back shaking with laughter as he bends to pick it up. Caleb is ignoring me, scrolling through his phone. All the men in my life treat me like I'm a joke. I'm going on vacation, I announce to both of them. Caleb looks up and raises an eyebrow.
What are you saying, Leah?
He is goading me. I don't know why I take the bait. I'm saying that with or without you, I'm going. I march out of the room so I don't have to see his expression. Why do I feel like a 10-year-old? No, there is nothing wrong with me. It's him. He doesn't want me for who I am. He wants to make me someone else. This is a game Caleb and I have been playing for years. He gives me a standard by which to live. I fail. He follows me.
What are you doing?
He grabs me by the arm as I try to walk away.
You're trying to control me.
The idea of a controlled Leah bores me, I assure you. However, being part of a family means making decisions as a unit.
Oh, please, I spit at him. Let's not pretend anyone but you is making the decisions.
I pull my arm away. I'm tired of the dog and pony show I always have to put on for you.
I am at the stairs when I hear him say,
Well, there you have it.
I don't look back. Upstairs, I pull out the street painting Courtney brought me from her trip to Europe. I keep it wrapped in wax paper in a box. I touch the red umbrella with my fingertip. Courtney said that I was her red umbrella. When she was in turmoil, all she had to do was come stand near me, and I'd keep the bad stuff off of her. It wasn't true. I failed Courtney. I failed my father, and I was in the process of failing Caleb. I shove it back in the box and swipe at the tears that are coming down my cheeks. I hear Estella cry out as she wakes up from her nap. I gather my emotions, take a deep breath, and go to her. Chapter 14. Past. We fought the day of his accident. Can you imagine? Your boyfriend almost dies, and hours before you tell him that you want to break up. I didn't mean it. It was a shit or get off the pot statement, a cruel attempt at strong-arming him into marriage. Except, you can't give Caleb Drake an ultimatum. I could see his face in my mind as the words left my mouth. Eyebrows up, his jaw clenching like a fist. The day before he left on his business trip to Scranton, we fought about the same topic. I wanted a goddamn ring. Caleb wanted to make sure mine was the right finger to put it on. Then the call came. I was at work when Luca's refined voice came onto the line. Luca and I had a floating relationship. Sometimes things were great between us. Sometimes I wanted to pour kerosene over her head and strike a match. She was saying words like hospital and memory loss. I didn't get it until she said, Leah, are you listening to me? Caleb is in the hospital. He doesn't know his own name. Hospital? I repeated. Caleb was supposed to be ring shopping for me. An accident, Leah, she repeated. We're flying out in the morning. As soon as I hung up with Luca, I started looking for flights. If I left now, I'd be there before midnight. She was flying up with Steve, Caleb's stepfather, in the morning. I wanted to be there first. I needed to look into his eyes and make him remember me. My father strolled into my office, a stack of papers in his hands. My mouse hovered over the purchase button. He was forever needing me to sign things.
What are you doing?
He looked at me over the rim of his glasses. Caleb's been in an accident, I say. He has a concussion, and he doesn't know who he is.
You can't leave, he said matter-of-factly. We're in the middle of our trial run. I need you here.
He dropped the papers on my desk and strode toward the door. I blinked at his back, unclear if he'd heard me. Daddy? He paused in the door, his back still to me. This was how most of our relationship was. Me talking to his back, or his bent head, or his newspaper. Caleb needs me. I'm going. I clicked purchase on the ticket and stood up to gather my things. I didn't look at him as I walked to the door, where he was most definitely frozen in place, glaring at me.
Johanna.
Don't call me that. My name is Leah. I pushed past him, the force of my body knocking him into the doorframe. I looked braver than I felt. I was good at that. Did I just defy my father? The man whose love I was forever trying to win, earn, deserve? It took every bit of métier I possessed not to turn around and assess his anger. I knew that if I looked at him, I would go running back, scrounging for the crumbs of his affection like a dog. He was furious, boiling. Walk, 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 I told myself. Caleb needed me. He was the good that I owned, and I was not going to let him forget me. What did this job matter? What did my father matter? I needed Caleb more than both of them. I drove home and threw things into an overnight bag. By the time I reached the airport, I was shaking. It was all a blur from there, going through security, finding my gate. When I reached the gate, there were still 30 minutes until the flight could board. I stood as close to the ticketing agent as possible. The marquee above her desk read Scranton, but it might as well have said Caleb. When the first boarding call was announced, I was the first one to hand her my ticket. Collapsing into my seat, I pressed my fingertips to my eyes to hold back the tears. I distracted myself by pulling out my iPhone and Googling amnesia. I was reading through the different types when the flight attendant told me I had to turn off my phone. I hated that. My boyfriend had amnesia. My father was going to disown me as soon as I got home, and the blue eyeshadow-wearing biatch was worried about my cell phone taking out a plane. I stowed my phone and flicked my nails over the pad of my thumb, one by one, starting with the pinky and working my way across. I did that for the duration of the flight. When it was finally time to land, I could barely keep from standing up and rushing to the front of the plane. I thought of all the things that could go wrong. Luca had mentioned on the phone that Caleb's memory loss was classified as retrograde amnesia, meaning he had lost the ability to recall anything that happened before the accident. How could someone just forget everything about their life? I didn't believe it. There was no way he could forget me. We were together every day. He loved me. That was the absolute worst thing about love. No matter how hard you tried, you could never forget the person who had your heart. Until Caleb, I didn't know what that meant. I was queen of datum and ditchum. The line moved forward, and I trotted out of the terminal into the car rental kiosk. 30 minutes later, I was speeding toward the hospital in a Ford Focus, the heat turned all the way up, and my right thumb flicking, flicking, flicking at my nails. It was snowing outside. All I'd brought was a light jacket and a couple of light sweaters. I was going to freeze. The walk up to his hospital room was the longest I'd ever taken. My chest hurt as I wondered if he'd remember me or not. His doctor, an Indian man with a kind face, met me in the hallway. There was some bleeding to his brain that we managed to get under control. He is in stable condition, but he is very confused. Don't be upset if he doesn't know who you are.
But what caused it? Thousands of people get concussions and don't lose their memories, I said.
There's never a single causal explanation for these things. All you can do is be patient and give him the support that he needs. With this type of memory loss, it usually takes time, but their memories return.
I looked fearfully toward his door. This was really happening. I was going to walk through that door, and the only man I'd ever allowed myself to love would not recognize me.
Can I see him?
The doctor nodded.
Give him space. To him, this will be the first time he's meeting you. If you want to hug him, ask permission first.
I swallowed the fist in my throat. Thanking the doctor, I knocked lightly on his door. I heard him say,
"Come in."
The first thing I saw when I walked in was the pretty nurse who was checking his IV line. She was flirting with him. My initial response was to walk directly up to Caleb and to kiss him. My territory. Instead, I stood furtively by the door and waited for him to notice me.
"Please. Please."
He looked up. I smiled. "Hi, Caleb." I walked a few steps closer. There was nothing in his eyes. My heart shook with each second of realization. There was not going to be a miracle when he saw my face. My beautiful red hair would not usher back his memories. I was made of steel. I could handle this.
I'm Leah.
He glanced at the nurse, who was pretending not to notice me, and she nodded, touching his arm lightly before heading out the door.
Hi, Leah, he said.
Do you...
I caught myself before I could say any more. I wouldn't question whether he knew me or not. No, that would surely paint me as an uncertainty. I would simply assert who I was to him and demand that he mentally accept it.
I'm your girlfriend. It's weird having to explain that to you.
He smiled, the old Caleb smile. I released the breath I was holding. God, I needed a cigarette. I neared the side of his bed. He was pretty banged up. There were 5 stitches over his right eye, and his face looked like a Kandinsky.
I was so scared, I said. I came right away.
He nodded and looked down at his hands.
Thank you.
The muscles were working in his jaw as he ground his teeth. I blinked at him, unsure of what to say next. Did we start at square one? Did I give him a summary of who we were? Where we'd been? Be still, my manic heart.
Can I hug you?
I shook as I waited for his answer. They were tremors of fear, a calculation of the loss I'd feel if he rejected me. He looked up, his brows furrowed, and nodded. It was one of those great moments of relief I would always remember. My internal knots untangled, and I dove at him, wrapping my arms around his neck and sobbing into his chest. For a few seconds, it was just me holding him, and then I felt his hands rest lightly on my back. I cried harder. This was so messed up. I should be comforting him, and here I was weeping. If he had died, oh God, I would have been all alone. His mother had told me that the driver of the car had died. I'd met him once or twice at Caleb's work functions. When I pulled away from him, I couldn't meet his eyes. I grabbed a wad of tissues from my purse and turned my back to him as I dabbed at my eyes. I had to keep it together. Think positive. Soon this would be over and buried in our past. For now, I needed to be there for him. We were so good together. Even if he had no memory of before, he would see it now. I needed to make him see it. I stifled a sob. Why did this have to happen? Right when our relationship had finally been moving forward.
Leah.
I froze. My name sounded foreign on his voice, like he was saying it for the first time, tonguing the syllables cautiously. I dabbed at the last of my tears and faced him, smiling.
Are you... God.
He balled his fists when he saw my wet eyes.
I'm so sorry.
He looked like he was about to cry, so I sat on the edge of his bed, seeing my opportunity to be of some use.
Don't worry about me, I said. I'm fine, so long as you're fine.
He frowned.
I'm not fine.
Then neither am I, but we're in this together.
Chapter 15. Present. I'm in the living room, flipping through Vogue while Caleb cooks dinner. The baby is sleeping upstairs, and the television is on some grody news station, playing just loud enough so Caleb can hear it. I'm thinking about changing the channel to put on America's Next Top Model, when I hear her name. My head snaps up. Olivia Caspin. Her picture is on the screen as she stands surrounded by reporters. I grab for the remote, not to turn it up, but to change the channel before Caleb can see it.
Don't,
I hear from behind me. I squeeze my eyes shut. Shrugging, I increase the volume. The newscaster is female. I once read a statistic that said 60% of men tune out female newscasters. Unfortunately for me, Caleb is not one of those men.
He edges closer to the TV, the knife still in his hand. His knuckles are white. My eyes trace up his arm and rest on his face. From his nose down, his features are marble. Everything above that is registering emotion on a nuclear level. His eyebrows are drawn, and his eyes look like a loaded gun ready to go off at any moment. I transfer my gaze to the television, afraid that if I keep watching him, I'll start crying. The trial for Dobson Scott Orchard will begin next week. His attorney, Olivia Caspin, who up until this point has been mum about her client, recently made a statement saying she took the case after the accused kidnapper and serial rapist contacted her directly, asking her to represent him. It is highly speculated that Olivia, who received her undergraduate degree from the same college as one of his victims, will be issuing a plea of not guilty by reason of insanity. The show switches to a commercial. I flop back against the couch. The picture they had shown of Olivia was grainy. The only thing really visible was her hair, which was much longer than it had been through my trial. I slowly pivot my neck around until I can see Caleb's face. He is standing motionless behind me, his eyes slightly narrowed and glued to the toilet paper commercial, like he's suspicious of their 3-ply guarantee. "Caleb," I say. My voice catches, and I clear my throat. Tears sting at my eyes, and I have to use all of my willpower to keep them from spilling onto my cheeks. Caleb is looking at me, but he is not seeing me. I want to throw up. How fragile is my marriage if all he has to do is look at her and I cease to exist? I turn off the television and abruptly stand up, sending the contents of my lap crashing to the floor. I grab for my purse, feeling for where I stashed my cigarettes the night I went to Mother Gothel with Sam. I pull them out, not caring if he sees, wanting him to see.
"Are you serious?"
His voice is calm, but I can see the unbridled anger in his eyes. "You don't own me," I say casually, but my hand is shaking as I lift my lighter. It is such a lie. Caleb has owned every one of my thoughts and actions for the last 5 years. Why? Was I always such a sellout to love? I think back to my other relationships as I take a drag. No. In every relationship that came before Caleb, I had the power. I blow my smoke in his direction, but he's gone. I stub out the cigarette. Why did I feel the need to do that? God. I don't go to bed. I sit on the couch all night, drinking rum straight from the bottle. Self-reflection is not something I excel in. I think of myself as being perfectly photoshopped. If I start scraping at the layers of what I'm suppressing, what I've put a pretty picture over, things would start looking pretty ugly. I do not like to think about who I really am, but the loneliness and alcohol are loosening my restraints. I call Sam to distract myself. When he picks up, I can hear music in the background.
"Hold on," he says.
He comes back on a few seconds later.
"Is Estella okay?"
"Yes," I say, annoyed. I can hear his sigh of relief. "I am not a good mother," I announce to him. "I'm probably worse than my own self-absorbed, critical, gin and tonic drinking mother."
"Leah, are you drinking?"
"No." I set the bottle of rum aside. It misses the table and crashes to the floor. Good thing it was empty. I flinch.
"You better have pumped before you did that," he snaps.
I start crying. I did. Everyone is so judgmental. He hears me sniffling and sighs.
"You're a pretty bad mother, yes. But you don't have to be."
"Also, Caleb still has strong feelings for Olivia."
"Can you just not focus on Caleb for once? You're obsessed. Let's talk about Estella."
I cut him off. "I think I've always known this, but I'm not sure.
I can pull dozens of memories from some private storage room in my brain that only alcohol has the key to unlock. Most of the memories are of looks, the ones he gives her, and not me.
I bite my kneecap and rock back and forth.
You know what? I have to go, Sam says. I'll see you tomorrow.
He hangs up. I toss my phone aside. Fuck Sam. When Caleb looks at her, his eyes shift into a different gear. It's like he's seeing the only thing that matters. I am sickly familiar with the way he looks at Olivia, because it is the way I look at him. When I stand up, the room swings. I am so drunk I can barely understand my own thoughts. I stumble upstairs and into my closet. I pull down bags and suitcases until I am surrounded by L's and V's and the subtle, rich smell of leather. I am going to leave him. I don't deserve this. It's just like Cammy said, I'm being half-loved. I stuff a few handfuls of clothes into a bag and then collapse on the floor. Who am I kidding? I'll never leave him. If I leave him, she wins. I wake up with my face pressed to the floor. I groan and roll onto my back, trying to fit the pieces of last night together. I feel worse than the day I gave birth. I wipe the drool from my face and stare around at the mess. Suitcases and duffel bags are littered around me like my closet rained them. Was I trying to reach something when I knocked these down? I have the violent urge to vomit, and I hurl myself towards the toilet, making it just in time to empty my stomach into the bowl. I am gasping for air when Caleb strolls in, smelling clean and fresh. He is dressed in shorts and a t-shirt, which is odd since he works today. He ignores me as he slips his watch over his hand and checks the time.
Why are you dressed like that?
My voice is raspy, like I spent the night screaming.
I took the day off work.
He won't look at me. A bad sign. I am trying to remember what I did to him when I catch a whiff of my hair. Smoke. I inwardly groan as the memories come drifting back. That was so stupid.
Why?
I ask cautiously.
I need to think.
He heads out of the bathroom, and I follow him downstairs. Sam is feeding the baby. He raises his eyebrows when he sees me, and I run my fingers through my hair self-consciously. Screw him. This is entirely his fault. Ever since he showed up, my life has slowly started unraveling. Caleb kisses the baby on top of her head, and walks toward the door like he is late for something. I chase after him.
What do you need to think about? Divorce?
He stops suddenly, and I slam into his back.
Divorce, he says. Do you think I should divorce you?
I swallow my pride and the challenge that is on the tip of my tongue. I have to be smart. I've let myself get carried away lately. Pushed him, when I had the chance to make things right.
Let me go with you, I say evenly. Let's spend the day together. Talk.
He looks unsure, his eyes darting to the nursery door. She'll be fine with Sam, I assure him. It's not like I'd do anything anyway. My statement seems to seal the deal. He nods once, and I want to scream in relief. I'll just be 5 minutes, I say. He heads out to the car to wait for me. I launch myself up the stairs two at a time and slam through the door of my closet, almost falling over in the process. I put on a clean pair of jeans and pull a t-shirt over my head. In the bathroom, I splash water on my face, wiping away the smudged makeup, and take a swig of mouthwash. I don't bother with new makeup. I come running out the front door, and I have a small heart attack when I don't see his car. He left me. I am ready to fall down in the driveway and cry when his shiny BMW turns the corner. Relieved, I get in and try to play it cool.
You thought I left you, he says.
There is humor in his voice, and I am so relieved to get something other than coldness that I nod. He looks over at me, and I see surprise cross his face. I look down at myself self-consciously. I very rarely let him see me without makeup, and I never wear t-shirts. Where are we going? I say, trying to distract his attention from how disgusting I look.
You don't get to ask questions, he says. You wanted to come along, so here we go.
I'll take it. He turns the radio on, and we drive with the windows down. Normally, I would have a fit about the wind messing up my hair, but I'm so beyond caring, I almost enjoy the feel of it on my face. He heads south on the highway. There's nothing but ocean in this direction. I can't even begin to guess where he's taking me. We pull into a gravel driveway about an hour later. I sit up straighter in my seat and peer around. There is a lot of foliage. Suddenly, the trees open up, and I am staring at aquamarine water. Caleb takes a sharp left and pulls the car underneath a tree. He gets out without saying a word. When he doesn't do his usual spiel of coming around to open my door, I jump out and follow him. We walk in silence, trailing the water until we come to a small harbor. There are four boats, bobbing gently on the swells. Two of the four are newer-looking fishing boats. He passes these and heads for an old sea cat that is in bad need of paint. Is this yours? I ask, incredulous. He nods, and I feel momentarily affronted that he never told me that he bought a boat. I keep my mouth shut and climb on board without his help. Sea cats are a British brand. I'm not surprised. He usually buys European. I look around in disgust. I am allergic to things that are not shiny and new. It looks like he has started to work on it. I smell the sharp tang of sealant, and I spot the can next to the hatch. I try for a nice, neutral comment. What are you going to call her? He seems to like my question, because he half smiles as he messes with the rope that holds us to the dock.
Great Expectations.
I like it. I was prepared not to, but I do. Great Expectations is the name of the book where he chose Estella's name. Since I gave birth to the screaming pile of flesh, I feel pretty good about the whole thing, so long as it has nothing to do with Olivia. Don't think about her, I chide myself. She's the reason you're in trouble in the first place. So are we going to take her out? I ask the obvious question. His head is still bent, but he lifts his eyes to look at me as his hands work. It is one of those things that only he does. I find it incredibly sexy, and I get butterflies. I sit down on the only available seat, which is ripped, and watch the muscles in his back as he turns on the engine and steers us out of the harbor. I am so insanely attracted to him, even in the wake of our fight. I want to rip off his clothes and climb on top of him. Instead, I sit ladylike and watch as we cruise over the water. We stay like this for a long time, him at the wheel and me waiting. He turns off the engine. The shoreline runs in a parade of sand dunes and houses to my left, the ocean dark and blue to my right. He walks to the helm and looks out over the water. I lift myself from my seat and walk the few steps to join him.
I leave tomorrow for Denver, he says.
I won't go postpartum and kill your daughter, if that's what you're getting at. He tilts his head slightly and looks down at me.
She's your daughter, too.
Yes. We watch the waves lap against the side of the boat, neither of us speaking our thoughts. Why didn't you tell me about the boat? I run my fingernails over the pad of my thumb.
I would have eventually. It was a spur-of-the-moment purchase.
That's fair enough, I suppose. I've bought shoes that probably equaled the cost of this thing without telling him first. That spur of the moment meant it was an emotional purchase. The kind I made when I was in depression or worried about something. What else are you not telling me?
Probably the same amount of stuff you're not telling me.
I cringe. So painfully true. Caleb could see through walls like nobody's business. But if he really knew what I was not telling him, he'd be gone tomorrow. And I couldn't have that. If he really was hiding more, I was going to find it. You know everything about me. All of my secrets and family drama. What could I have to hide? I say. He faces me. There is a dark cloud behind him. It seems like an omen. I shiver.
There is a lot I don't know about you, he says.
My mind immediately goes to the fertility monitor and clomiphene I was using to get pregnant. His brain is working overtime. I can see the burning behind his irises. When Caleb thinks, his eyes practically glow. I hate that. The benefit is, I always know when he's on to me. His eyes now dart to mine. They drop to my mouth and then lift back to my eyes. He narrows his and tilts his head like he's reading my thoughts. Can you read a secret on someone's face? I fucking hope not.
When you came to me that night, in the hotel, were you trying to get pregnant?
I remove my eyes from his and stare down at the water. God damn, he can. My hands are shaking. I fist them. Then I fist him with the truth. Yes. I don't know why I tell the truth. I never tell the truth. Damn it all, I want to suck the words back into my mouth before they reach him, but it's too late. Caleb links his hands behind his neck. His eyebrows are up, 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 creasing his forehead into half a dozen little lines. He's mad as hell. I think of that night at his hotel. I went there with determination. I had a plan. My plan worked. I never thought I'd get caught. Caught I was. I flick my thumbnails across the pads of my fingers. Flick, flick, flick. Caleb is biting the inside of his cheek. It looks like he wants to take off running. He runs to think. When he speaks, his words come from between his teeth.
Okay, he says. Okay.
He looks up at the sky, the struggle evident on his face.
I love her so much.
His voice cracks. He leans an arm on the side of the boat and peers into the water with me.
I love her so much, he starts again. I don't care how she came to be. I'm just glad she's here.
I breathe a sigh of relief and look at him out of the corner of my fearful eye. He swallows, once, twice.
You got pregnant on purpose, and now you don't seem to want her.
It's hard to hear, both parts. Chilling and true and ugly. I thought she'd be a boy. My voice is so low it's competing with the waves, but Caleb hears me.
And if she were, would you like being a mother then?
I hate when he forces me to think. Would I? Or was this role something I was doomed to fail at, boy or girl? I don't know. He lifts his head to look at me. I eye the scruff on his face, and I want to touch it.
Do you want her?
Don't tell him the truth. I don't know what I want. I want you. I want to make you happy.
But not Estella.
His voice is catching edge. The edge that usually indicates I'm in big trouble. I try to work my way out of it.
Of course I want her. I'm her mother.
My voice lacks conviction. I used to be such an accomplished liar.
What you did after that, was that planned out too?
I watch his chest play the in-out game. Rapid, angry breaths. He's stealing himself for my answer. I suck in all the air that the sky has to offer. I pull it until my lungs burn. I don't want to let it go. I want to hold that air and hold the confession he's forcing out of me. I don't have to tell him the truth. Caleb.
God, Leah, just tell me the truth.
He runs a hand through his hair, walks a couple paces to the left so that I can only see his back.
I was upset. Courtney.
He cuts me off.
Did you do it to make me come back?
I swallow. Fuck. If I say no, he'll keep asking me questions until he traps me.
Yes.
He swears and drops to his haunches, his fingertips pressed on his forehead like he's trying to hold his thoughts in.
I think I need time to think.
No, Caleb.
I shake my head from side to side. He shakes his up and down. We look like a couple of distraught bobbleheads. The whirlpool starts, panic sucking me down until I whimper.
Don't leave me again. I can't take care of her alone.
I drop my head.
You won't have to, Leah.
I look up at him hopefully.
I'll take her with me. She's my daughter. I'll take care of her.
Oh, God. What have I done now?
He gets up, turns on the cat's engine, and we are slicing back toward shore, the remnants of my sanity shredding. The minute he ties us to the dock, I am off the boat and racing to my phone, which I left in his car. I want to get out of here. My fingers become boneless as I fumble with the screen, jabbing uselessly. I dial a taxi service and tell them my location. I am shivering despite the heat.
My God, what was I thinking telling him that? I can barely breathe as I see him walk down the dock and toward where I am perched against the hood of his car.
Even in lieu of our current situation, my heart stirs at the sight of him. I love him so much, my heart aches. He won't look at me. I don't know what this means, but thinking is never a good thing. Thinking stirs up a dangerous maelstrom of emotions. My emotions almost drowned me once. I don't want to go back there. The gravel shifts beneath his feet as he walks to where I sit. My arms are wrapped around my waist as I try to press my sanity back into my torso. He stops a few feet away. He's coming to check on me. He hates me at this moment, but he's coming to check on me. I called a cab, I say. He nods and looks out at the water, which is just visible beyond the copse of trees where he parked his car.
I'm going to stay here, he says. I'll call you when I'm back so I can pick up Estella.
My head snaps up. Pick her up? Oh, yeah, that.
I'm going to take her to stay with me for a while at my condo.
I breathe through my nose, grappling with my emotions, trying to rein back control of the situation.
You can't take her from me, I say through clenched teeth.
I'm not trying to. You don't want her, Leah. I need some time to think, and it's better if she stays with me.
He rubs his forehead while I calmly panic. I want to scream, don't think, don't think.
What about work? You can't take care of her with your work schedule.
I'm trying to buy time. I messed up, but I can fix this. I can be a good mother and a good wife.
She's more important than work. I'll take some time off. I have a trip next week. After that, I'll come get her.
My thoughts drag. I can't come up with excuses for why he can't do this to me. I can use the baby as leverage, threaten him, but that would screw me in the long run. If he wants to take some time, maybe I should let him. Maybe I need time too. I nod. He presses his lips together until they burn white. Neither of us says anything for the next 20 minutes. He waits with me until the dingy-looking cab pulls up, spraying gravel at our ankles until it comes to a stop. I climb in, refusing to meet his eyes. Perhaps he is waiting for me to turn around and tell him that it was all a lie. I look straight ahead. The drive from the Keys back to Miami is taken across narrow patches of land that stretch out over deep blue water. I refuse to think. All the way home. I just can't do it. I focus on the cars we pass. I look in their windows and judge their passengers. Sunburned families coming from vacation. Blue-collared workers with bored expressions. A woman crying as she sings along with the radio. I look away when I see that one. I don't need to be reminded about tears. When I get home, Sam has just put the baby down for the night. He studies my face and opens his mouth, the questions ready to pour out. "Don't fucking say anything," I snap. His mouth is still hanging open when I storm up the stairs and slam my door. I hear his Jeep pull out of the driveway a few minutes later, and I peek through the drapes to make sure he's gone. I pace around my room, flicking my fingernails and trying to decide what to do about this mess Olivia created. Then, almost abruptly, I jerk toward the hall and slip inside of the baby's room. Tiptoeing to her crib, I peer over the edge, like I expect to find a snake instead of a sleeping infant. She is on her back, her head to the side. She's managed to wriggle a hand free of Sam's swaddling, and she has it fisted and partially in her mouth. Every few seconds, she starts sucking on it so fiercely, I think she's going to wake herself up. I back up a few steps in case she sees me. I don't even know if she can see me yet. Mothers usually keep charts of these things. First smile, first burp, first whatever. I tilt my head and look at her again. She's grown, gotten a little less yuck. I'm surprised that I can actually see myself in her face, the curve of her nose and the sharp chin. Babies usually just look like blobs until they're four, but this one has a little character to her face. I suppose that if any baby were to be cuter than the rest, it would be mine. I linger for another moment before stepping out. I close the door, and then I open it, remembering that I am on my own tonight. No Caleb, no Sam, not even my self-absorbed alcoholic mother. I have watched Sam and Caleb enough with the baby to know the basics. You feed it, it craps the food out, you wipe away the crap, you put it in the crib. You drink. Oh, God. I slide down the wall until my butt hits the tile and drop my head between my knees. I can't help feeling sorry for myself. I didn't ask for this life, to be loved second best and to be forced to have a baby. I wanted what Olivia had and threw away. Someone who adores me even though my insides curl and lash like a poisonous snake. No, I think. I am not the poisonous snake. Olivia is. Everything that I've had to do is her fault. I am innocent. I fall asleep that way, sniffling and wiping my nose on my pant leg, assuring myself of my innocence and listening to my daughter breathe. Maybe she'd be better off without me. Maybe I'd be better off without her. I wake up to a siren. Fire. I jump up, my muscles unraveling in protest. I am disoriented and not sure where I am. It is dark, still night. I place a hand against the wall and sniff for smoke. Not a siren, a baby. I am not really relieved. I might have preferred the fire. I head to the kitchen,
knocking things over in my haste to find a bottle and a pack of breast milk. I swear out loud. Sam must have moved things around because I can't find anything. Then I see the note taped to the fridge. No more breast milk. You need to pump.
Damn.
I look at the breast pump, which is sitting on the counter. It will take at least 15 minutes to pump the amount she needs, and she is screaming so loud I'm afraid someone will hear and come to investigate. I see Child Protective Services showing up on my block, and I cringe. I can't afford any more run-ins with the law. Taking the stairs two at a time, I pause at the nursery door, taking a deep breath before pushing it open. I flick on the light and flinch. The sudden change seems to make her angrier too, so I flick it off and put on the small lamp in the corner. I remember picking the lamp out at the Pottery Barn. Brown bear. For my son. I head to the crib for my daughter. She is soaking wet. Her diaper has leaked through her clothes and onto her sheet. I set her on the changing table and pull off her onesie. Once it's off and I've re-diapered her, she seems to calm down, but she's still wailing.
Shush,
I say. You sound like a cat. I move to the $5,000 rocking chair my mother bought me and sit in it for the first time. You're a real pain in the ass, you know that? I glare at her as I lift my t-shirt. I look away when she latches on. It takes all of my willpower not to yank her off. The next 30 minutes are pure torture. I am a human bottle. My legs are crossed, and I bounce my foot to keep my sanity. My eyes are closed and pressed against my fingertips. I hate this. She falls asleep, still sucking. I lift her to my shoulder to burp her, but she beats me to it and burps in my face. I laugh a little because it's so disgusting and carry her to her crib. Standing back, I feel a small sense of accomplishment. I can take care of a baby. Let's see you do that, Olivia. The constant cycle of feeding continues until the sun cracks through the palm trees like an overzealous fucking spotlight. I hide my head under my arms as it shines through the flimsy nursery curtains, cutting a line straight for my eyes. I'd moved myself into her room a few hours earlier, curling up on the twin bed in the corner. There had been no sleep. None. Nothing. I roll onto my back and stare up at the ceiling. I smell like sour milk. I am just about to haul myself to my feet when her caterwauling starts up again. Oh, God, I say, crawling towards her crib. Please, just let me die. Chapter 16. Past. He was with her. He had to be. I went to his condo, and I called his parents. No one had seen or heard from him in a few days. I left half a dozen voicemails, but he never called back. My life was starting to feel like a runaway train. I was heading towards something bad at a breakneck pace. Caleb was pulling away from me. My fingers, which used to be twined with his, were now gripping air. I needed to grab onto something, take back control. I considered asking my mother for help, but after she'd told me to follow Caleb to that bitch's apartment, I'd been too ashamed to tell her anything else about the situation. Courtney. I called my sister and told her everything. Geez, Leah, what are you going to do? Courtney was in her first year as a teacher. She had taken a job teaching math to inner city kids at a high school. Seriously, you have to find him and talk to him. Who is this girl anyway? She obviously knows about you and doesn't care. What a heartless bitch. I don't know that he'd listen, Courtney. He's not himself. I heard voices in the background. I have to go, she says. I'm doing after-school tutoring. This is the love of your life. You have to fight for him. Okay, I said. How? She was quiet for a few seconds. Figure out who this girl is.
If she's just a fling, let it go. He'll come back to you. If it's more, you have to put a stop to it. Hear me?
I hear you.
She hung up. I felt rejuvenated. I stopped for a Jamba Juice and drove straight to the apartment complex I'd followed Caleb to a week earlier. His car wasn't there. I knocked on the door and heard a dog barking. I knocked again, louder. If that damn animal kept making that racket, someone was going to notice. At my feet, there was a welcome mat and a small potted plant to the left of it. It did little to brighten the dull gray corridor. Looking around, I squatted next to the plant, lifting it off the ground. Nothing. I stuck my finger in the soil and dug around until I came up with a small Ziploc baggie. I dusted away the dirt with my finger and leaned in for a closer look. A key. I snorted. Standing up, I put the key in the lock, and the door swung open. My ankles were immediately under attack. I managed to dodge my way around the ugly creature and close the door to the apartment, locking it outside. I pressed my ear against the door. I could hear it whining on the other side, and then the faint click of nails on concrete as it trotted away. Good. Taking a deep breath, I turned to face the apartment. It was nice. Decent. She'd put work into making it homey. I walked over to the living room. It smelled so strongly of cinnamon, I wanted to find the source. I followed the smell to one of those plug-in wall things and nudged it with the tip of my shoe. What type of woman used those? I had never even thought to buy one. Fuck it. Enough screwing around. I started in her bedroom. That's where women had been hiding their secrets since the beginning of, well, secrets. I pulled out her dresser drawers one by one, running my hands along the back of her clothes. When I reached her underwear drawer, I grimaced. Please, God, do not let Caleb have seen her underwear. She wears lace. Black and white and pink. No patterns. I closed the drawer empty-handed and looked at her closet. So far, she's boring. Caleb doesn't do boring. Well, the Caleb I used to know didn't do boring. I shook my head. I had no idea who this new Caleb was. I wanted the old one back. I clicked on the light in the closet. It was creepily organized. A shoebox rested on a shelf above her clothes. I pulled it down and slid off the lid. I felt like I'd been punched in the stomach. Staring up at me was a picture of a much younger Caleb. He had his arm around a girl with raven black hair. I recognized her from the day I followed him to her apartment. What did this mean? They knew each other? Had Caleb reached out to her after he got amnesia? Was he trying to connect with his past? I flipped through the pictures. They were more than just friends. My God. I stopped on a picture of them kissing and flung the box away from me. What was happening? Did he know who she was? Or... No, it had to be her. She somehow found out he had lost his memory, and she showed up to mess with his head. Oh my God. Caleb had no idea. I stopped rocking and scrambled for the box. Inside are handwritten letters in Caleb's slanted print. My eyes burned as I read through them. His words. To this girl I knew nothing about. Except this wasn't just any girl. This was Cherry Garcia. I was almost sure of it. I had to find him, tell him what she was doing. But first things first. I gathered what I needed into a pile and stuffed it into my pocket. Then I went to look for scissors. Chapter 17. Present. No one comes. By noon, I realize that I have destroyed my marriage, and it is Sam's day off. I break out the scotch. I don't even like scotch, but for some reason it makes me feel bonded to Caleb. The little brat is finally sleeping. I don't think twice about taking two fingers of Caleb's best, She's so high-strung, a little single malt would do her good. I catch a glimpse of myself in the hall mirror as I trudge up the stairs toward the shower. I look like one of those chubby, lank-haired mothers who occupy park benches, all the hope drained from their eyes. Is that what I am destined to become? A single mother, wearing ugly jeans and doling out those disgusting goldfish cracker things at snack time? No. I square my shoulders. If I am going to do this, I will not go to the damn park. I will go to France, and I will feed her caviar and pâté. I can do better than a stereotype. I can be a Chanel mother. By the time I climb out of the shower, I feel like a new woman. No wonder Caleb drinks that expensive stuff. I'm practically walking on air. When the baby wakes up, I feed her from the stock of milk I pumped earlier. She already seems fussy, like the bottle is an inconvenience instead of a meal. She screams and thrashes her head around until her skin flushes as red as the troll fluff that's sprouting on top of her head. I wiggle it in her mouth until she finally latches on, grunting with her eyes closed. Lost that battle, didn't you? I say, resting my head back in the rocker and closing my eyes. If you think I'm going to be doing that all the time, you're wrong. Spoiled little red-headed brat. I wake up in the rocker. The baby is asleep on my shoulder. I can feel her heat seeping through my clothes and hear her little breaths in my ear. I lower her in her crib as gently as I can and check my phone. Nothing from Caleb, but two calls from Sam. I am about to call my good-for-nothing Manny when he sends me a text. Sam, stomach flu. Need a few days off. Before I know what I'm doing, my phone is spiraling out of my hand and toward my beautiful fucking marble staircase. I close my eyes as I hear it smash into a dozen pieces.